Now, the Bram Weinstein Show on Washington's new home for sports. ESPN 630.
Hey, babies. Hi, everyone. I don't like DeMar DeRozan. Hi, everyone.
That was a dagger.
Bram Weinstein Show on ESPN 630 is presented by Flight by Yuengling. Raise the bar at the next generation of light beer. What's up, everybody? How was New Year's? Good?
Boring. Nonchalant, I guess.
Mine was all right.
You guys did the seafood tower, all that? What'd you end up watching?
We did a seafood tower. Uh-huh. We did filet mignons. We had a Junior's cheesecake that I bought at Balducci's.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Spent a little extra this year.
All right.
I watched a lot of TV. We watched a bad Disney Plus movie with the kids called Encanto.
Bad? And then, no, that was not bad. I've watched that. That's not bad.
It's horrible.
Oh, no.
My brother, who works for Disney, agrees with me. It was not good. Like, bad.
I would call it bad. It was bad. Not great. I'd call it good. Not great.
It's terrible. All right. It's one of the worst Disney. I mean, the animation's beautiful, but, like, the story is stupid as hell. Like, it's just beyond. Like, you know, like, there's nothing wrong with the animation. It's beautiful. But, like, right, the songs are dumb. The story's dumb. It has no point. It really needed a heel turn that I'd like to explain to anybody who's actually seen it.
I agree with you, actually. Yeah. I did think that was neat.
I wanted the girl with no gift who saved the house to turn on her family at the end. That's what I wanted.
Anyway,
that movie wasn't very good. And then we watched the ball drop shows. And we were flipping between Ryan Seacrest at Times Square on ABC. And Pete Davidson and Miley Cyrus.
That's what we settled on. We knew that was the one for us.
Okay, so listen. That was a way better show. Highly inappropriate for children.
Not family friendly whatsoever.
Yeah. No. And we were, my wife and I were looking at each other. We're like, this is NBC, right? Like, we were surprised how raunchy it was, you know, for NBC. Like I know what I'm getting myself into with Miley Cyrus, but like, I thought it'd be toned down pretty significantly, and it kind of wasn't. So we were a little surprised. Like, a couple of the skits they did, they were just openly talking about drug use and sex, and I was like, oh my God.
There were joints on live TV.
They did joints, I know. And like, the hard part was the show was way better than the one on ABC.
It was way better.
Okay, so the one on ABC, they threw to Sierra in L.A., and she would throw to, you know, a couple of decent musical acts, like some guy named Masked Wolf, who, you know, is copying hip-hop from 7 years ago and, like, doing it now.
Right.
And then, like, a couple other acts that, like, I recognized a couple of the songs, but I didn't really, they weren't, like, big, big acts. Then they kept promoting that BTS was coming on, but it was actually a BTS concert that was done 2 years ago. It wasn't even a live one that they showed. I really boo. Big time boo. Then they said Journey's coming out here. And I'm sitting there going, Journey? Like, how old's that band? And I'm like, are they all alive?
No.
And as it turns out, they're not.
No, isn't it like the majority of them gone? Like,
yeah. Like, there was a couple of them that I'm like, I think that guy was in the original version of it. And then the front man is Asian now. And like, I'm not judging. I was just surprised. That's all. He had a nice Journey voice, but I was like, surprised. That's all. And then you go back to the Miley Cyrus Pete Davidson one. And they got Sweetie going, and Miley's doing her songs, and it was just way better. I mean, it was 100% better of a program. It was just a little raunchy for a 9-year-old, and I would have liked a, you know, what you're watching, PG-13 to R rating pop up on my screen. I could have used it the other night.
Fair enough.
I mean, not that I'm like anything hosted by Pete Davidson and Miley Cyrus. I don't know why I would think that was going to be Mr. Rogers, but you know, I didn't think they'd allow for some of the stuff that they allowed to happen on it. So
I think, if I was a parent, I would have known to probably not touch that one just because it was both of them.
Calling me dumb?
A little bit. Pete Davidson and Miley Cyrus, you are not asking for anything remotely educational or held back. That's all I'm getting at. That's all I'm saying.
I agree. Like, and You know, this, of course, led to the after the kids went to bed conversation of, and why is Pete Davidson popular? Like, we had that conversation. That happens about once every 3 weeks now.
that sounds about right. Yeah. No, it sounds about like, right. I mean,
why do all girls think he's hot? And why is he popular? And what has he done that is, like, memorable in any way, shape, or form? And I can't come up with it. I don't hate the guy. Like, I don't hate the guy for it. I just don't get it. So we have that conversation. And my wife just is like, she's like, well, you just don't get it now. And I'm like, you've just been told by every woman that you have to like him and therefore you do. And there's no other reason for it. He's not a great actor. He's okay comedian. He doesn't do anything memorable. He's been on Saturday Night Live for years. Name one character that's been memorable on it. He just has somehow found himself into like social circles and people like him.
It's a bit of a schlub. Bit of a schlub is what I would say.
I don't know what's up. It's weird. I don't know. Anyway,
I will say this too, just because you mentioned Encanto at the beginning. I did watch Boba Fett, and it did make sense to me. So I don't know.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
It
made total sense.
Maybe you could tell me during a break, okay, because I didn't really. We had no context for what was going on there.
I'll happily explain to you.
We didn't dislike it. We just didn't know what was happening.
There's some time jumping.
Very confused.
Yeah, there's some time jumping that happens, but I don't think you realize what the start was, and I can easily explain it. You're going to go,
no,
oh.
I really don't realize what the start was.
It's that.
Okay. All right. That would be helpful.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So let's get into the game from yesterday. Okay. First time in a month that I think it was a missed opportunity. Like, I'll hear him out on all the people that were missing, sure, and that's part of the story of the season. But I really think that they would have, could have, should have, and probably should have won yesterday. They had them. And there are a few things that really stand out to me that I think are, you know, kind of the missed opportunity part of it. Early in the game, you know, this kind of does go back to who was missing. Early in the game, the second and third red zone trips ended up in third and longs. It completely bogged down the second they got inside the 20, and they settled for a couple of field goals. And in both of those cases, those were the moments where I went, no Logan Thomas, no Antonio Gibson, no J.D. McKissick. This is where this is glaring, you know, is down here that they just don't have these type of reliable targets in those spots. And therefore, I'm not surprised this happened, but they did bog down and field goals instead of touchdowns. I think we all kind of knew we're going to hurt them in the end, and they did. And then in the second half, I'm not going to blame people who weren't there. I'm going to blame the occurrences on the field. And there's two specific ones that I didn't particularly like. And D'Angelo was talking about this a lot yesterday. He was like, this team needs to take a shot down the field to Brown, McLaurin, Campson, somebody, pick somebody. You just got to throw the ball down the field, because they were having trouble moving the ball. And it became clear that while I liked some of the design of the things they were doing, they were not doing so to get any plays down the field, but trying to shift some of the aggressiveness away from the side of the field the ball was going to, i.e. they set up an elaborate screen for John Bates. And I'm like, okay, like, why would you choose him to set that play up for? Because even if it works to a certain degree, he's not exactly fast, and he's not exactly shifty. Like, is this the playmaker you want the ball in the hands of at that point? Like, Carter, McLaurin, Sims, Patterson, Smallwood, pick one of these other people. You know, like, that felt like Brown, any of the other felt like a better option to run the type of stuff that they were trying to run. The fourth down play, which I is another example of this. It ended up going to Dax Milne short of the sticks, number one. So the execution of it was off. And then Heineke explained that they typically go to the other side of the field, and they went against, you know, their tendency, but went towards a guy who hasn't made a catch in 5 weeks. You know, it just,
yes,
I didn't like that part of it. I really didn't. And I know they're shorthanded, and I know they have to turn to other people, but there were these kind of these moments where I went, I think you're overthinking yourself a little bit here. The object is to get the ball into McLaurin's hands, Brown's hands, Patterson's hands. You still have people who can move, Carter, and that's not where the ball was going at critical key moments. So that's my large criticism of what happened yesterday.
I mean, I think that overall is going to lead into what I was going to get, was there's just the play calling in general was so lackluster in the second half. It was good enough in the first half, but the second half, it was like hair-pullingly bad of like, what are we doing here? Why are you doing this? And that also got encapsulated by they abandoned the run again. Like, the reason they won four straight games this year was because the running game was working. Patterson was solid yesterday. I'm not going to say he was amazing or he was Gibson-esque, but, like, offensive line once again looked all right against a front that they probably were outmatched a little bit, but when they completely abandon the run, that is where they get in trouble and everyone just drops back and starts teeing off. I just thought the play calling in general second half was really bad from Turner. I didn't like what they were doing at all whatsoever. It doesn't help that, you know, the Eagles had like an 8-minute drive or whatever it was in the third quarter and that, you know, keeps the ball away from you. But like, I don't think they were doing themselves any favor in a close game where they clearly are still missing people. They're clearly outmatched a little bit. I wouldn't say by a bunch, but against the Eagles. But like, they got better players than Washington has right now. And I just thought you're shooting yourselves in the foot when you're not trying to run the ball to try to extend the game or, you know, shorten the game on your side of the field. I just thought it was a little baffling for the play calling in the second half.
Yeah. And then I want to go, there was another one. And I mean, you know, this is easy to complain about in hindsight because it didn't work. But I did not agree with the 4th-and-5 go for it. When it was about 7.5, 8 minutes to go in the game, they're down by a point. They're at midfield. It's 4th-and-5. I get the, you know, the feeling of let's just go for it. And there's been a lot more of that lately in the league, but this team was having an extremely hard time moving the ball.
Yeah.
They hadn't even sniffed scoring a touchdown in a, you know, a quarter and a half, two quarters and a half, whatever. I mean, it'd been a while. They were not really moving the ball at all. And I know there's a new punter here, but on that spot on the field, I think I might try to trust my defense here and try to pin them. And if you get the ball back and hopefully with decent field position again and you start a new drive, what you're asking Heinicke and the offense to do is just get into field goal range and go win the game. Instead, you know, the risk reward was really high here. If they don't complete it, which they didn't, now Philadelphia's got the ball at the 50 and, you know, they're 20 yards away. They have a very good kicker. They're 20 yards away from kicking a field goal that makes this a must-have touchdown to win. So, you know, like, obviously no one knows. Like, they could have punted and the Eagles could have driven 98 yards and scored a touchdown for all we know, or gotten into field goal range and took more time off the clock. But I just didn't particularly like that decision. And then when they did go for it, the execution part of it, who they chose to throw the ball to, and the overall execution of the play in general were all lost. I mean, it was like, you know, it was three misses in one. Like, I didn't like the call. Fine, you're going to go for it.
Yeah.
You know, the throw wasn't great. The choice of, you know, target wasn't great. It wasn't a good matchup. Like, I don't know. That's like miss to me. So, you know, for the first time, what I feel good about today is for the first time in a month, I feel like I can actually criticize them with the overarching, but they've been in an S storm and I don't know how you could have expected them to win any of these games that they played anyway. So what does it even matter? Yesterday felt like you had every chance to win and it falls into the category of the third real missed opportunity of the season, New Orleans, Denver, and this one. And if they had won those games, it'd be 9-7 right now. And I include yesterday, they had every chance to do it. I had said this a lot over the last, you know, 2 weeks since we played them twice, Philadelphia. I loved our matchup against them. And I think you saw why in the two games where they are wildly undermanned and could have won either one of them. Like, I don't think Philadelphia is that good. And I like our matchup against Philadelphia if we have our team. You know, and unfortunately, we just don't have our team. So, you know, like it is an overarching part of it. And I do think it comes into the category of, do we have the type of playmakers, you know, specifically on defense to turn a game right now? No. Do we have the guys that we trust in the red zone when we need them? We haven't for weeks. And I think that that's manifested in low scoring outputs for weeks now. And yesterday it was glaring against Philadelphia not to have Thomas, Gibson, McKissick, people like that. But then again, you have to work with what you have. And yesterday I just didn't like some of the choices that were made along the way to try to to either manage the game to steal it at the end or some of the choices made of targets.
Yep.
And I think that is on them. You know, like at that point, that's a valid criticism of him, even, you know, with whoever you're missing. Like, yeah, Philadelphia is a way more healthy team. You know, they should win a game like this. They've caught, this is not unlike Washington last year when they caught Philadelphia at the end of the year in a must-win game to get into the playoffs, to win the division. And Philadelphia was wildly undermanned when they played them and then did us the extra favor of putting Sutty in the middle of the game. That's yesterday. Washington was the wildly undermanned team, but they could have stole it, and they unfortunately did not.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, I largely agree, and it was, I don't know, disappointing. Like, I think that's the word I would use, but also not surprising either. Like, it's just,
yeah,
they're going through.
No, it's not a surprise.
Through.
I mean, you know, I think like the idea that they were going to win felt, you know, hard to take, but I did feel, here's where I was on Friday. I didn't know what kind of effort they were going to put out there because they're openly saying we're emotionally and physically spent. And then the roster is in tatters and there's still all these people missing from COVID. And then at the last minute, all of a sudden Gibson and Flowers can't play. And you're like, oh my God, they lose their punter. You're just right. Like, oh my God, you know, like it's just ridiculous what's happened over the last month. But in the end, I kept looking at Philadelphia and the way that they play, and without Sanders, and Hurts is not the same trigger man that he was 4 or 5 weeks ago, probably because he's still getting over the ankle injury. And I'm sitting there going, they're not dangerous, actually. Like, and I think their defense, it's funny. Like last year, Washington had, you know, top five defense and everyone anointed them top five defense. I can't wait to hear what people say about Philadelphia next year, because did you know they're a top five defense right now in the NFL?
No, did not.
They are. Do you think they are?
No.
I don't.
I don't think they
are they bad? No. Like, of course not. But like, are they a dominant, are they Pittsburgh's defense? No. Are they Tampa's defense? No.
I think
like,
a rushing offense has skewed those numbers.
Yes.
That's what it feels
like.
Time
of possession.
Yeah.
Time of possession. So they've controlled the clock a lot in recent weeks because they're a rushing offense. They're not a bad defense by any stretch of the imagination. Like they have a really good defensive line. Like really, you know, Fletcher Cox can still really play. Josh Sweat's like pretty good. You know, like Javon Hargrave is a good player. Like they have a good defensive line. Their corners are good. So, you know, Slay's good. Nelson's fine. Their safeties are fine. You know, like their linebackers are fine, you know, but they're not, like, who do you look on there and you're scared of on that team? Nobody. Like, they don't have playmakers over. They don't have Aaron Donald. They don't have Jalen Ramsey. They don't have that Cowboys line. They don't have anything like that. So, but they're fifth, or at least coming in yesterday, they were fifth in the NFL in defense. So they're the new Washington this year. You know, they're going to make the playoffs and go wherever they go. And I don't think it's going to be very far, but they'll go wherever they go. And next year, people are going to be asking, can their defense be that much better because of the ranking? Can their offense be this much better because of what they built so far? And I don't think they know the answers to that at this point. I don't know.
No, I think it's about right. I think it's about right.
So the other thing I want to talk about is the railing, just for a moment.
So, yes.
Because, you know, look, that is embarrassing. You know, like it's sure. Highly embarrassing.
100% agree.
It's the third time now the stadium has had a massive failure of infrastructure.
Sure.
Twice with pipes, you know, and now once with the railing.
Yep.
I know people have finally come around to that was there to help disabled people and is not meant to have eight people leaning on it.
Yes.
And that said, considering where it's located, maybe that should have been rethought because it is in the tunnel where a team is going to walk out of. And it is possible that a crowd of people might lean on the railing.
Yep.
And so, you know, that I, you know, but then again, it's also this stadium has been around for 25 years now and they have not had a problem like that.
Right.
And unfortunately it happened. And I'm very glad that nobody got seriously hurt. I actually thought Jalen Hurts, that's cool as a cucumber stuff, that he saw that happen, stepped away from it, and then took pictures with everybody and made sure they were okay. So I actually thought that was pretty cool that he was able to, you know, fortunately he didn't get hurt. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And that whole thing was, you know, it's awful to see. This does fall into this category of, I wish people would stop going out of their way to emphasize this. It is a news story. It is something that happened. I know nobody likes this stadium. I don't really like it either. We're going to be moving out of it, hopefully in the next, you know, 4 to 5 years, whatever it may be. Hopefully this year you'll get some renderings of what the shiny new house is going to look like.
Right.
And you could stop, you know, focusing on the old dilapidated house that nobody likes. But when Washington fans go out of their way to point out to other people things like this, I think it falls back into the cycle of negativity again. Like, it happened. It's not great. I think if you really think about it, 10 people leaning on a railing meant to assist disabled people should not have been forced to support those kind of people in the first place. It's terrible it happened. I'm glad everybody's okay. I wish our fans would stop pumping it out there. Like, I get it. Other fans are going to make fun of it and they're going to put that out there. It's when our people are doing it that I'm sitting here going, what purpose does it serve for you to pump out that your stadium had a crappy thing happen in it yesterday? Like, I don't know. I just don't. It's why I didn't repost the video or really comment on it. It's terrible it happened, and I'm glad everybody's okay. And clearly, considering its location, the team really needs to think about reinforcing that so that that doesn't happen again. But why are we, the people who are supposedly the fans of this team, pumping that out and boosting it on social media? Like, I don't know. It's the cycle of negativity thing. It just falls into that category again where I'm like, why are our people making a point of this? Like, what? Like, why do you want to be embarrassed is the question.
My thing here is when things like this happen, I don't have a problem with the reaction. Like, I'm with you. It's a cycle of negativity thing. People are going to amplify it. I retweeted it. Like, it's something that you amplify because it's something that happens.
I guess.
My main problem is that nobody asks the questions of why something happens when something like that happens, though, especially off of yesterday's incident. The pipes, whatever, you know, like, that one is what it is. And, like, I know, like, remember originally it was, oh, my God, it's sewage. If it was sewage, they would have had to evacuate most of the stadium. Like, you don't just have sewage rain down on somebody and then all of a sudden they get a sweep and they can stay in the game. That just doesn't work like that. So stop saying that one was sewage, by the way. The other one with this one for yesterday was, like, you're not supposed to lean up against railings like that. You and I know that. Like, if you've ever been to a wrestling event, those are the same exact kind of grates that they use. And so what I would ask there is, what is the procedure for that? Is security supposed to let fans there? Because my guess is no. But my guess there is security's main, you know, gripe is keeping those players and everyone on the field safe. So you let that kind of slide and you just make sure nobody's jumping the rail to go hug Jalen Hurts or whatever. I'm going to guess, though, because there were so many Eagles fans there, they jumped that gate. Security's probably gone, I'm just going to rile them up if I ever tell them to get back, whatever. And what happens when Hurts is walking, there's a surge of people, and it just literally topples it over the edge. It was a bunch of circumstances that were bad, but, like, it wasn't the stadium falling apart. It was, like, a grate that you shouldn't lean up on. And I don't know. I'm with you. Like, I know why it was amplified, but why don't people ask the real questions of why something happened or actually just analyze it in a way that they should have? Was it an infrastructure thing? I don't think so. I think it's just something that they've rigged up for ADA access and it fell apart. And then let's start asking those questions, not, God, FedEx Field is the worst. They can't get out fast enough.
But it falls into the category of, okay, here's another thing that happened and everybody turns it into Dan Snyder's the worst owner in the history of mankind. Yeah. It's why we'll never win. And this is why we're in a cycle of hell.
Totally.
And I keep that sucks that happened and it's embarrassing, you know, again, you know, it is, but I just don't understand if you're a fan of the team, why you want to amplify that messaging behind it. I don't understand that. I don't know what purpose that serves. It goes back to the whole, if you just hate the team so much, why do you follow it closely?
No, I agree with you on that. No, I love
it. You know, and like there are things that happen in stadiums every single week that you could probably, if someone walked around the camera and caught all the fights in the parking lots and caught all the fights in the stands and caught all the things that, you know, some dude throwing a hot dog at some girl, like you could find this anywhere and you could turn that into a symbol of why the organization is the worst. If you really wanted to do that.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm like, I get it's going to be made fun of. I get that other fans are going to really make fun of it. I just don't know why our fans then have to spin it to yet another example of why I'm in some kind of purgatory and I'll never get out of it. And I want that to stop. I heard Rivera on one of his radio hits last week say something to the effect of, we need to stop talking about the past, you know? And I agree with him. Like, I agree with him. It is... this is all new here. They're trying to build something, and it you're either going to get behind that or you're not. And you got to stop, you know, mired in some kind of past. And when something goes wrong, let it be a speed bump, not another sign from God that we're all damned and cursed.
You know? Fair.
This is not the plagues. You know, like, we've got to stop already. Frogs have not fallen from the sky yet. No cattle disease. All right. Like, just give it a chance, for crying out loud. And listen, we're a week away from the autopsy. You'll be very proud of me. I got ahead of it. I went through the whole roster, did the whole cap thing. I looked through everything. I am ready and prepared to talk about the things that they need to do, who they could try to re-sign, who might get cut, what kind of ramification. I'm all ready to do all of that stuff because we're there. But give us one more week and one more game. And honestly, this weekend, and I know this is going to sound like, you know, stand up for Rivera talk, but I do think if they do win this weekend, they will have won the same amount of games they won last year. And just think about the things that happened this year for a moment. Just consider that for a second. And if I told you they were going to lose their starting quarterback in week one in the first quarter, and both of those defensive ends, and they're going to be missing their Logan Thomas, and they're going to be missing portions of their line for bulk of the year. Curtis Samuel was never actually going to play in any meaningful way whatsoever. Landon Collins was going to change positions, but then he got hurt. William Jackson ended up not really working out as free agent signing. Now he's hurt at the end of the year. The COVID stuff that occurred throughout the year. And I told you they ended up with 7 wins, the same amount they had the year before. Would you have believed me? And I think with some context, if you really consider what happened here this year, it ain't the worst thing that's ever happened. This is not rock bottom.
No, totally. I'm on that train. Yeah. That, like, rock bottom. This is not it.
No, it's not.
Can I have one more?
I think some of these things kind of came out of Rivera's control. Some of them are in his control, like yesterday, which I didn't like some of the decisions that were made yesterday.
Yes.
I think they let a game get away from them. I think it early in this, I am more mad about what happened early in the season than I am late in the season. I don't understand why the defense didn't play very well early in the year.
Yes.
What was going on there? What he meant by maturity for the first 6-7 weeks. Like, what in the world was that all about? Like, the New Orleans game was an embarrassment, giving up those plays to lose that game that way. Having that kicker on the team that shouldn't have been there in that Denver game that blew up in their face.
Yep.
You know, like, that's on them. And I think that's all very fair criticism. And I think we could have a very serious conversation of criticism about the offseason moves that led to some of this too, because the big high price free agents did not work out. He's having a long conversation today about how his first round pick certainly didn't have the rookie year they expected. And he was basically benched yesterday.
Yep.
So, you know, there's a lot to talk about that I think are worth having valid criticisms about. My whole point is, let's just not go through the cycle of hell. Like, let's just get on board with trying to what's being built here. And at the same time, there were a lot of things that were out of his control, like the last month when they were 6-6. This is the first time in this four game stretch where I felt like they let one get away. The other three were they had no shot. And I knew it going into all of them. I knew it.
Yeah. One more complaint about yesterday, and I'm not going to call it major because it's not Rivera's fault whatsoever, but, like, come on, how did nobody think to give Ryan Kerrigan a video tribute yesterday, or at least honor him in some way, shape, or form? Like, come on.
That's,
like,
a big miss.
That's a huge miss. The guy was on so many teams that sucked here. Like, those guys deserve to be honored just as much as the guys that win Super Bowls.
It's just a huge miss.
Like, second all-time sack leader of the franchise.
They showed him. They showed it in pregame. He was talking to Allen and Ioannidis, and they showed it on the Jumbotron, but they made, you know, did not put his name up, you know. Like, and this is also pregame. I noticed it in pregame, but I'm with you. I thought during a timeout, for sure, they could get a close-up of him and just a
quick 30-second tribute. It's nothing. It's not
30
hard.
Seconds, right.
It's not
showing
hard.
A couple sacks, all-time franchise sack leader.
Yes.
Everybody likes the guy. Good guy. Like, it was not a falling out why he left. Like, there's no ill will whatsoever. He's going to go up in the Ring of Fame, I would think, at some point.
Show him in a Caps and a Nats uniform because he went to all those games, too. Like, supported all the squads here. I get it.
I don't understand it. I'm with you. I don't understand it. I think it's just such a simple thing to do.
Yes.
It really
and
is.
And we can talk about the cycle of negativity and all that. This isn't that, though. This is why everybody's worried about a new name and a new brand, because these types of things, they have largely, one, not been good at, or two, been non-existent it's worrisome, man. As a fan that's, you know, just like you, grown up here, rooted for them my whole life, when these types of details get missed, it sucks. Because you don't have a second chance at it either. You don't have a second chance at it. Like, you might not be on the Eagles next year and might be somewhere else, and you don't get to do that tribute. It's just, I don't know. Like, the details, when those are lost, it sucks. It just sucks, period. And
The only reasoning I could think is because he's playing on a rival, but I just don't even understand. I don't know. I'm with you. I thought that was a huge miss.
Doesn't matter if he's on a rival. The way
I agree.
It doesn't matter.
Like, it'd be one thing if he left and there was a lot of ill will.
There's a lot of that in this division, too.
Yeah. Well, when LeVar left, you know, it was really ugly when he left. And he's playing for the Giants. And I get it. Like, what are you going to do? Show a tribute to him up there? I mean, same with B. Mitch, too. When he left and went to the Eagles, there was a lot of ill will there. Like, he was really mad. And so I think they need a little separation from one another. So I understand it. That's not Kerrigan's case. Like, Kerrigan had a great career here. The team chose not to re-sign him, you know?
Yes.
He had no ill will. He said not a bad word about the organization.
Exactly.
He took a job. I don't know what you want from the guy. And I'm with you. I don't know why. That seemed like a really simple thing that for some reason was totally missed here.
Right.
I don't get it.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. When things like that are missed, like, that falls in line with the Sean Taylor type stuff. And it's like, how does just not one person behind the scenes, like, keep an eye on this type of stuff? Like, hey, by the way, Kerrigan's coming down, you know, coming to town. Let's do something. And just nothing, you know. So attention to detail. It's a big opportunity that they need to really start doing going forward. Really,
I thought it was a miss, too. I was hoping they would do something to honor him, and I was surprised that they didn't.
Yep.
All right, let's take a quick break. You'll hear from Ron Rivera next on the day after the loss to the Eagles. Brave Watch Side Show, ESPN 630 Sports Capital. All right, welcome back. Brave Watch Side Show on ESPN 630, presented by Flight by Yuengling. Raise the bar with the next generation of light beer. All right, let's check in with Ron Rivera. One game to go after the playoff hopes were officially eliminated yesterday with the loss to the Eagles yesterday. There was a lot to discuss, including, would Kyle Allen play? That was kind of up in the air as of last week, assuming, you know, elimination was coming. So there's that. And then Jamin Davis as well, first round pick, who's not had the rookie season I think anyone really envisioned. So here's Ron Rivera the day after the Philly loss.
I mean, now that you had a chance to go back and look at the game, what stood out to you from there, particularly with the offense?
Well, offensively, it was like a reflective first half to second half. In the first half, we get in the red zone a couple of times, but we don't put the ball in the end zone because we stopped ourselves. There was a negative play somewhere along the line that was created that hurt us. Getting to the second half, you know, and we had a negative play at the very beginning. We were backed up, an illegal procedure. Now it becomes first and 15. You got to overcome that. You know, first and 10, we give up a big sack, got to overcome that. And it just becomes too much at times to overcome. And that's really kind of what set us back, because when we did move the ball, when we did roll offensively, we're doing some pretty good things. I thought some guys played very well. I thought Taylor did the things that you needed to do to give yourself a chance, more so than anything else. I thought John Bates continues to take big strides. Diami made a couple of plays that really, you know, you get excited about. One of them was on special teams. Thought he made a heck of a tackle. So you see that confidence that was building. I think it was one of the really good things that we did, was we got him on special teams. He made a couple of plays on special teams, and all of a sudden he's got confidence that, hey, I can do this. So that was good to see. You know, and then I thought some elements of the offensive line were good. Especially young guys that got opportunities to play. It was good to see them go out there and function. I like the young backs. I thought Jared really had a solid day, performed hard, played hard, did those good things that you're looking for.
And now that you guys are officially out of the playoffs, what changes do you think you might make with the lineup this week to try to get some guys some work, particularly at quarterback? You've mentioned previously the idea of playing Kyle here at some point.
Yeah, well, we'll start off with Taylor, and then we'll go from there.
Thank you.
Ron, kind of along those lines, I mean, at this point, you've kind of played most of the guys in your roster because of injury or the virus, but how much do you plan to use Monday's game as an opportunity to get an even closer look at those kind of deeper on the depth chart?
And I think that's one of the things that we talked about today as a coaching staff was, hey, guys, you know, we want to try and go out and set a tone early on and see what happens. But at some point, just understand we'd like to see some guys. And if there's guys that you want to see specifically, you know, make sure we plan that out, we map it out, and we go out and do it. I mean, you want to go out and win. You really do, and you want to play to win. but you also want to play for the future. So we're going to set ourselves up, you know, see what happens and try and set some sort of tone and tempo early on, and then we'll go from there.
And then with it being just one game, how do you kind of factor that into, you know, the decisions you'll have to make in the offseason?
Well, I think that'll be part of it because one thing that, you know, and to your point, Nikki, we have played a lot of guys and there's a lot of guys that have really caught our interest that we've said, wow, you know what, potentially going forward, look at what we've seen here, you know, and that's a cool thing to be able to sit there and point some guys out and say, this guy has shown us something. We need to take a deeper dive into who he is. And so this game, there's going to be a point where there will be some guys out there that we want to really watch. And we're pretty excited about them.
Thanks.
Hey, Ron, with the quarterback going, if you do end up playing Kyle, what is it that you would, is it about giving him a chance or is there something that, you know, you wanted to see from him as you determine decisions going forward?
Well, you just want to see him get out there and play with some consistency and some rhythm more than anything else. You know, we got a nice little glimpse of it when he came into the Dallas game and got a chance to see that. So, you know, and again, to me, he's a guy that you know who he is. He's very steady. He's a game manager. And, you know, when he gets his opportunities, you know, we'll see how it goes.
And then when you look, and I know there's still another game left, but when you look back on some missed opportunities this season, do you look back at this period or do you look back more at games like New Orleans, Denver, and those kind of games?
Yeah, I most certainly will. I mean, we'll go all the way back to the beginning and we'll go through each game individually and see the things that we could have done that could have helped us. You know, and obviously there are some elements of the San Diego game that you look at and you say, wow, we had some chances here. You know, you'll definitely look at the Saints game. You'll definitely look at Denver. But we'll look at them all and really go through each game and try and pick it apart and just say, hey, you know, these are the things that we've got to be better at. And this situation we've got to handle. You know, those types of things are important as we evaluate what happened this season.
Thank you.
All righty.
Ron, you've been here now 2 years. What do you think the biggest challenge has been in rebuilding this team?
I mean, there's a lot of things that we looked at, you know, and honestly, it just hasn't been what's been on the field, but what has been off the field, and that's tough sometimes too. But you know, I think really has had a lot to do with just finding players that fit, you know, how we wanted to do things, the things that we want to do. And I think that's one of the things that we've got to continue to look at, just how well do these guys fit? And then staying healthy. I mean, you look at some of the things that we've gone through in terms of player health. That's been a hard part of it, especially this year, you know, more so than any. You know, having guys like, you know, JD go down and Logan go down, Chase, Roulier, I mean, you know, and then Chase Young. I mean, these are guys that you're hoping to have the next few years as well on your team, but when they get hurt, it's kind of tough to continue to evaluate everything.
Because injuries kind of are random at times, are there things that you guys can do in the offseason to, whether that's, I guess, bring in healthier players or bring in new medical, like what kind of changes can be made?
Well, the biggest thing with injured players is, you know, for the most part, most of them, you know, those are things that you just can't control. And that's the hard part, obviously, is that you can't control certain injuries. The thing that you hope for is as we get these guys back, and one thing that we have to understand is just how important the off season is for us. You know, hopefully the COVID situation will be in control. Hopefully we won't, you know, it won't be a battle to get guys to be here. You know, when we're working together so we can develop this cohesion that you need to go forward. There's a lot of things that come about when you do get together. And, you know, during that 5 week period, those 9 weeks that you have, as far as OTAs and mini camp are concerned, those are valuable. I mean, those are opportunities to build. It's an opportunity to introduce certain elements of what you want to do. It's a chance for us to evaluate going into camp. And then once you get to camp, it's an opportunity to sit there and see if, you know, things that happened during OTAs and mini camp are things that we can rely on as we build and go forward. I mean, that's the thing, and that's going to be the truth of the matter, is that this offseason is going to be very important, very vital to what I think is, you know, is part of the plan. I mean, it's, you know, it's time, I think, that we see we see this team start to take that big step forward.
Thanks.
Yeah, Phillips.
I'm sure you've heard this before over the years, but, you know, there are fans who will say, if you guys lose on Sunday, you end up with a better draft spot. Obviously, you have a lot of needs that could be a positive for the team. What would you say to those people?
Well, we're going to play to win. I mean, that's, you know, to me, that's nature. That's human nature. You should always play to win. And that's going to be the approach. You know, whoever you put out on the football field, you're putting out there to win. And that's going to be the whole attitude, the whole mentality as we prepare this week.
And then to go back to what you were just talking about, is that a fair expectation to put on you for next year? I know it's so early to say that, but you talk about taking that big step forward. Is that a fair thing to expect?
Yeah, I'd like to believe so. You know, it, to me, there's a lot of things that we've been working on, a lot of things that we feel good about. You know, there are some things that were out of our control this year that really hampered us. But, you know, at the end of the day, though, you if you map things out, you plan things out, and this is really what we believe, I don't see why not. You know, and again, I know expectations will be high. I know people will say, what's your third season? You know, this is what happens in the third season. I mean, and again, I get it. But at the end of the day, you know, we have some holes that we want to fill. We have some players we want to, you know, make sure these are the right kind of guys that are going to be out on the football field. But that's all part of the process that I believe in, you know, and I know, you know, and believe me, I didn't come here thinking that, you know, it's going to be an easy turnaround. Those first 2 years are going to be great. I think we outdid the expectations our first year. I thought coming into the second year, and I said it to you guys, you know, that there are certain things that I was still concerned with. Now, going into third year, I'd like to believe that we've taken some big steps. There are some things that we want to do in free agency, some things we want to do in the draft. I think that can help us. And we'll see. We'll see where everything falls into place. But I just feel good about some of the things that we've done. I know a lot of people, you know, they may not be able to see it, but that's okay. This is how I feel about it.
Appreciate it.
Ron, has it been hard to maintain that perspective throughout this year? And then also going back to what you said, why do you think it's been maybe difficult to find players that fit?
Well, I think part of it is Sam, finding players that fit is, you know, the offensive structure that was here when we got here was different from what we do. The defensive structure was different from what we do. And so you try to take those guys and see if they fit, see if they mesh and it was what you want to do. In some cases, you know, they have, and in other cases they haven't. You know, and then the second part is you got a lot of young guys that are coming from, you know, from the college ranks, you know, your draft picks, your college free agents that have to look at things and understand how to play within the scheme work. That's part of it too, Sam. I think that's a big part of finding guys is just being able to ID these guys. Trying to get on the same page with the scouting department, you know, the personnel department. That's a big, big thing too, is understanding that, hey, these are the type of players we want for these positions. And it's been good. I if you go back and look at, in my opinion, the draft and then what we did with free agency and the guys that we were able to look at and like a great example is the offensive line. You know, one of the things that I think has really helped is just the attitude that we want to bring in certain types of guys to fit certain types of positions. I think that's what we were able to do. And I think because of that, we were able to keep, you know, at least that group together and performing, you know, as best as they could. And that helped us. That gave us a chance. And so that's the kind of thing that we're trying to do for all our positions.
And so going forward, do you feel like you guys are on the same page in terms of building throughout this offseason?
I think so. Talking to Martin, you know, post game yesterday, Martin and I visited afterwards, and we went through a number of things and talked with Marty about these things. Talked with Eric Stokes and Tim Gribble, and I think when you sit down and you talk to these folks, and we all understand and feel the same thing about where, you know, what we need to do, you feel good about that. You know, everybody's on the same page. That's for sure.
Thank you.
All righty.
Ron, Chase didn't participate in OTAs last year. I assume he's not going to be able to do it this year because he's not going to be on the field. So is there a plan for him off season?
Oh, yeah, most certainly. And that's one of the things that we want to get across. I mean, again, it's you know, there'll be certain things that he will be able to do. We'd love to have him do it. Again, I get it's a voluntary situation. But to me, you know, this is one of these things. And in our situation where we are in terms of our, you know, our rebuild, it's one of those things that this is when you're looking for, I think, everything being put together. And that's kind of the way I'm going to approach it.
All right, there you go. That's Ron Rivera today after the loss to Philadelphia yesterday. All right, we'll talk more about the Washington football team next couple of hours. I want to get into the Caps, though, next. Brandt wants to show ESPN 630 Sports Capital. All right, welcome back. Brandt wants to show ESPN 630 Sports Capital. I'll get into Antonio Brown at the top of the hour. We'll go through the slate of games that occurred yesterday. Get into the Wizards, brah, later this hour, and then we'll revisit all the Washington football stuff that happened as the season effectively came to an end yesterday with one to go, meaningless game between Washington and New York. But as Ron Rivera said, and I feel the same way, I think Taylor Heinicke should play it, personally. And I'll give a lot of reasons why later. And I do hope they win it. I know all the draft pick people want them to lose. I would prefer they win it. I don't know. I'm not into that. I go try to win the game. And the Giants have been, you know, as bad, if not worse, and have kind of less excuses than Washington does. And I'll read all the Joe Judge stuff in the next hour, too, where he's saying this is not a clown show. And yeah. I just like, I don't know. He's like, he's clearly like become unglued by, you know, the two seasons that he's had there. Anyway. Nope. All right. Let's get into the Caps here for a minute.
Sure.
Who, as of Friday night, stole a game against Detroit, won that one 3-1 on New Year's Eve.
Yep.
And then yesterday lost in overtime to the Devils 4-3. So give me the Caps weekend. What happened?
Well, first off, worth acknowledging that Alex Ovechkin on Friday passed Dave Vanderchuk for the most power play goals of all time. No, that's not a misspeak. That is exactly what it is. He has more power play goals than literally anybody ever that's played. So congrats to Ovechkin on that one. That one, by the way, the NFL or the NHL like went back and forth three or four times from when the game was going on to like an hour after post game. It was not a power play goal because it was as it expired against the Red Wings. Then they changed it. Then they changed it back, and they ultimately ended up giving it to him. So he is now your all time leader in power play goals. So you can't say enough about Ovechkin and that he's just, you know, he's starting to hit some of these milestones that might not ever be touched again.
But did anyone in Canada try to qualify that as not as great as it sounds?
No one did that. Okay. On New Year's Eve. No, not at all. So congrats to Ovi on that. It's always worth acknowledging anytime something like that goes down. But yes, they swiped one from the Red Wings. Ovechkin also got an empty net goal in that matchup. So he was the goal leader going into 2022. But that was a hard-fought game. Once again, the Caps, like, they don't quite know what they've got with some of these lineups night to night. Their defense is taking a hit. Martin Fejervaari is still in COVID protocols. He's been there, I want to say, for 2 weeks, like today or tomorrow he'll be in 2 weeks. They are missing their top pair of defensemen really badly right now, and Fejervaari. So you could tell why some of these games are a little low scoring. They're playing a little more safe than normal. Yesterday's game, though, they had no business really being in it. The Devils were all over them from the beginning of the game. They were up, I believe it was 2-0, then went up 3-1, and they were all over the Caps. The Caps did not look like they had it. Mackenzie Blackwood, the Devils' goaltender, screwed up a couple of times, and the Caps capitalized, tied it 3-3, went into overtime. Caps, once again, lost in overtime, though. That's starting to get concerning, that they just cannot, for whatever reason, play the 3-on-3 overtime. It's not the worst thing in the world. You still got 3 out of 4 points.
Well, no,
over the
because
weekend,
here's the good news. Yeah. When the playoffs roll around, they don't do that.
True.
So,
true. No, exactly. And so,
you know, I think it feels flukish that they keep losing in overtime.
I agree. Yes. Ben Raby and I were talking about this yesterday on Caps Radio Network, that basically if you go across the league, there's no correlation. Like, good teams are bad in overtime, like the Caps, and there are bad teams that are really good in overtime. And there's not really a, like, quantitative way to really, like, take it to, you know, take what it is. But with the Caps, they clearly just cannot, you know, handle the 3-on-3 for whatever reason. The one thing I'll give them credit for yesterday was they found out right before the game, once again, TJ Oshie and Nick Backstrom are going to be out, and they are out due to non-COVID illness, which means the flu is probably going around in the room right now, which honestly, if you're a Caps fan, you kind of know this. This happens once a year to this team where they all get sick for whatever reason. It rotates through the room. So they're dealing with that and COVID, it seems, at the time. I feel bad for Backstrom because he seemingly keeps getting one game in and then taken out for either injury or COVID, or now it's the non-COVID illness thing. So they can't have Backstrom enough only because of how bad the power play is without him. He makes that thing go. There's a reason why they scored on it on Friday when he was in the lineup. It was because of him. So, you know, once again, they lost in overtime yesterday, but it was because they also, or, you know, it's worth noting, they lost two of their top six forwards again in that matchup. So Caps just kind of, you know, stringing along. And what's kind of crazy now is they had a holiday break, came back, played three games, and now they're off again until Friday because they should have played Montreal tonight. Montreal pushing the games back, though, because they want the gate revenue has pushed back any games that they might have fans at. So the
cross-border stuff is messed up. Yeah.
Well, they can cross the border, though. That's the thing. They are allowed to cross the border, but it's because now it is purely financial from the NHL's point of view. Anyone with a partial partial attendance, especially someone like Montreal who sells the place out every single night, they want to start pushing that back and try to make some of the money back at the end of the year. So it tells you where they lie when it comes to that stuff. But now Caps off until Friday. Hopefully you get Backstrom and Oshie back from their sicknesses, Fairvari back from the COVID list. This could be a nice little, Peter Laviolette said it yesterday, a nice little mini camp for some of those guys that haven't played. And then they get the Blues on Friday and then the Wild on Saturday. So back to back out there, you know, in the land of hockey in St. Louis and in Minnesota. So
Washington Capitals, 34 games played, most points in the NHL.
Yep.
It's pretty unbelievable. Now, that said, Carolina's 1 point back. They've played three less games.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And Florida's 2 points back, played two less games.
Of course. So, it's worth noting, though, and I will keep saying it. Look at who the Caps have missed all year long. Not just COVID stuff, but injuries, who they've missed, when they've missed them specifically, when they're playing. And then you go look at some of the other standings. Alex Ovechkin leads the league in goals as of yesterday. I haven't looked at it since then, but he was up there in points as well and assists. So, like, I'm just saying, it's breathing in a little bit and enjoy the year, just because I just wouldn't have seen this coming if you had told me all the stuff that they were dealing with, and they're kind of passing it with flying colors, and good for them. Peter Laviolette, honestly.
I mean, and, you know, as flukish as it is, they keep losing in overtime. It's even more exacerbated by the fact that they have the third best goal differential in the league. So it is flukish that they're losing.
Yes.
Number one is Carolina plus 40. Caps are third plus 30. I'll give you a dollar if you can name who the second best goal differential in the league is.
Rangers.
Calgary Flames. Plus 31. Wow. Plus 31.
Wow.
So they got it going on up there in hot Calgary, baby. Hot Calgary summer, playa.
Something that got lost in the shuffle that Caps PR tweeted last week or 2 weeks ago, I think it was, and I forgot to mention it on the show, which I think is crazy. Because of last year's shortened season, they played, what, like 60, 61 games, something like that. This year, when Laviolette hit 82 games, Laviolette had the best record as a Caps coach through 82 games, more than anyone. I thought that was a crazy stat, considering what they went through last year. And you can tell me all you want. Last year, they got to play Buffalo a bunch of times, but they also still had to play Pittsburgh and Flyers and some of those other teams, and it was a crazy year. I just thought that was really impressive. Yeah,
I did. I loved the hiring. It was right place, right time. Get a guy like this to try to squeeze some juice out of a very old lemon. And I think he's done a very good job. Now, not unlike the last couple of years, they ran out of gas, but some of it was the old, they went into the ditch and all those guys got hurt.
Correct.
So I don't think he got a fair shake at it last spring. And this is going to be a weird year and will probably continue to be a weird year because of all the different cancellations and postponements. And now the Olympics are off. So let's see what they do with those weeks. It's weird. The whole thing's going to be weird. So when we get around to the playoffs, let's see where they are. Let's see who's playing and let's see how he goes. But I'd like to see this guy get a fair shake because I know he knows how to get it done. He had a half a hand last spring. So let's see what he gets when he goes in there this year. So.
And one other thing to add here too, when I'm bitching about the power play every night, it's because it's the only thing wrong with them. Like, I mean, it is. Truly, and it's with this personnel, they should be better. Ben Raby had stat of the day yesterday. The Caps had more wins in the month of December, 5, than power play goals.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.